Hello and welcome to episode 25 of the First and Goal podcast. I am Ben Roberts, joined with Sim Longa. And Sim, last time we talked about how the Rutgers game was gonna be kind of a swing game, and how it could be a real pivotal game for Purdue, kind of moving forward. Just kind of with as hard as it has been to play at the rack, just kind of exercising some demons there. And then, I mean, Rutgers record-wise may not be the best team, but anytime you go up against two lottery picks, you're always kind of worried. And man, did Purdue answer the call on the Thursday evening, a 68 to 50 win. A game in which they never, a game in which Rutgers never led. And I think the most impressive thing for me watching that game was just how well Purdue played despite not shooting well. That was one thing that had kind of plagued them, especially on the road, was when the ball wasn't going in, were they able to, still defend well? And it not only was it one of their better defensive games, I mean, heck, they held Rutgers to 50 points. But still, I mean, the offense still flowed really well. Brayden Smith finished with 14 assists. Honestly, probably could have had 20 if some guys were knocking down some shots. But I think that was the most impressive thing about that game was how dominant they were, and honestly was not their best, anywhere near their best game.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely, man. Like, if you had told me that going to the Rutgers they were going to shoot 4-24 from three, I'd have been like, oh man. So like Rutgers probably rushed the court on this type of stuff. And like you said, Rutgers record isn't the best, but when you have top talent like that, you do get worried about, hey, they have a special night, and then show why they're actually lottery picks. But like you said, the fact that they won. And one kind of like pulling away in the second half too, despite not shooting well. But the thing that kind of sticks out to me is the turnover difference. And so, despite the fact that they didn't shoot well, Purdue only had eight turnovers versus Rutgers having 16. And so, we're taking care of the basketball, and so that's important on nights when you're not shooting because not shooting well, because now you're not giving the other team other opportunities as well. Because and it shows it actually. To me, it points more to the fact that like it was bad shooting, because you probably don't have as many shots if you're turning the ball over all the time. But it was an impressive way for Purdue to win. It was a different way from what we've seen. And like you said, with Braden, he had 14 assists, but like I said, 4 of 24 from three. If you have like 10, like you hit 10 more threes, which obviously that sounds weird. I mean, it sounds kind of crazy, but like, if you hit 10 more shots, I'll just look at their field goals, or 28 of 56. If they hit 10 more shots, then he has what 24 assists. Like, I mean, it was yeah, it was really that second half, man. Like, I was waiting for the other shoe to drop, and I remember it got to 46-41. We called a timeout, answered with five straight, and it was just kind of like never the same after that.
Yeah,
It
no.
was just it was really good to see the poise that the guys had, and understanding that, like, hey, you don't have to, if you're not shooting well, you can still do the other things well. You can still rebound. You can still take care of the basketball. You can still defend. Like you said, they held Rutgers to 32% field goal shooting for the game, 50 points. Just really, really solid win.
And I think like all of the things that you described Caleb first. We've talked about him quite a lot recently, and honestly, it's because he deserved it. But this was one of those games where he really, like, if you look at the stat sheet, you're not blown away by the stats, but he really kind of put his thumbprint on the game, and really had meaningful impact. I mean, he freaking put Ace Bailey on a poster, which did not know Caleb could do, but shout out to Caleb.
Said, boy,
But
went up with violence, man.
just the energy and effort plays that he played with, but also just on the defensive end as well. You know, he's not your prototypical rim protector, but he does a really good job, especially like on the help side, protecting the rim. You know, he's not gonna like lead the league in blocks or anything like that, but he affects a lot of shots. And just like we said, just his effort play. I mean, this was a game where he, you know, it was kind of, for lack of a better term, an ugly game. And it played perfectly into kind of Caleb style there.
No, I think like you said, you definitely felt his presence more than what the stat sheet reflects. And I think what's also been good with him defensively is the fact that he's able to switch like one through four. Like if Caleb gets switched on somebody, he has that athleticism and the size to be able to move with someone who might be smaller and slightly more athletic. So it was just that game, like you said, with the way that Caleb's been playing, that was almost like a branded Caleb game in terms of how the whole team was able to kind of get it done, man. I was really impressed because this was truly a different style of winning for this Purdue team. I mean, I think I haven't gone back and checked, but I don't think they've won a game this year. I'm not sure if they've won a game this year. Maybe the Ole Miss game where they scored 68 points. Just feels like they've scored more. And it's had to be crisper on offense in order for Purdue to win. And it wasn't that against Rutgers, but like they were still able to get it done.
Just a really, like you said, overall impressive game. And just one last thing, kind of wanted to touch on before we talk about the Nebraska game. But just wanted to highlight Fletcher Loyer as well. He finished the game with the 13 points. Not kind of necessarily the type of efficiency that we're used to seeing from Fletch, but those 13 points helped him join the 1,000 point club. And so after that game, he finished with 109. And both him and Brain were honored before the game against Nebraska. A pretty cool moment at half court with Coach Payne, and they each had their 1,000 point basketballs there. And you got to figure this is the first of kind of many times where Fletch and Brain are going to be honored as they just continue to kind of set records and kind of climb up various leaderboards. But did just want to give a shout out to Fletch there as he passed the 1,000 point club. And if I remember right, he got it on a pull-up jumper, which was kind of prototypical, kind of the how we kind of see Fletch's game evolve is that, you know, he's definitely proven he's not just a 3-point shooter. And if you run him off the line, he has a deadly pull-up mid-range too.
Right. Yeah, that's been kind of the evolution of his game, like you said, who came in as that kind of shooter, but seeing that he's able to kind of go off the dribble and be able to hit that mid-range, and he's been getting that floater down pretty well as well. So yeah, it was nice to see that. So between Fletcher and Braden, they both have 1,000 points, which it's not half bad for a backcourt that's not considered the best in the Big Ten. So.
I'm sure we'll have many more discussions about that, but also not half bad for a backcourt that's played 90 games, 2.5 years. But you know, what do we know? But anyways, let's kind of jump forward to the game Sunday at Mackey.
Let's get
Nebraska came to
it.
town, and it was a whooping. They got dominated. And you know, obviously a lot of performances that we can highlight, but you have to start with the performance from freshman CJ Cox. I mean, 9 of 11 shooting, 5 of 7 from three, 23 points, but also 4 rebounds and 4 steals. So he and we had kind of talked about it on the last podcast how he like finds sneaky rebounds. But he also had 4 steals as well. And he just continues to find ways to, you know, show that he deserves to be in the starting lineup, but also earn Painter's trust, earn more minutes. And I thought it was interesting too. I think it was Paint that actually said it in a post game. And then PJ also mentioned how PJ Thompson has, they've both been trying to get him to shoot his mid-range jumper more, and get him more involved in the offense. And you got to think, moving forward after this shooting outbreak, that he's going to be involved a whole lot more.
Yeah, for sure, man. Like you said, he's continuing to show us what, like, finding ways to be able to impact the game. And like you said, like that, especially if you're able to between rebounding and, with the steals defensively, it's always going to earn you more playing time with paint. I just think it's impressive that he had 23 points and he played less than 23 minutes. I mean, he was, 9 of 11 from the field, and I think we were all aware of of his scoring capability. We obviously remember the hot streak he went on against Alabama, but for him to do it really from the start, in terms of just just being dialed in. I think he hit his first 5 threes, if I'm right. And it was just nice to see him have just a completely well-rounded game. He looks like over the last, 3, 4 games, he's looked a lot more comfortable, like as he's had that more time. And obviously, I think playing with Brayden, it helps. You have another ball handler on the floor. It's just, yeah, man, it was a really, really impressive performance by him. Like you said, the entire team, obviously, nobody had a negative plus minus. I mean, that's how dominant Purdue was, on Sunday. But yeah, in particular, CJ really, really balled out, man. That the efficiency and just the all around impact he had on the game, just really filled out the stat sheet. It was really, really good to see. And you hope he's able to continue to find ways to impact the game, even like games night in and night out. Maybe not with it being 23 points, but yeah, man, if he starts getting more comfortable with taking his shot more, that mid-range especially, he could be a guy again who can be that fourth scorer that Purdue needs night in and night out.
Yeah, and speaking of a guy who can be that fourth scorer, Miles Colvin really had a bounce back game. Him and Cam have been guys that we've talked about who you just kind of been waiting to kind of catch fire from three, because they're coming. Like, both of them are just due for like big games just by law of numbers because they've been struggling so much. And you gotta hope that kind of this gets Miles out of his funk. He finished 4 of 8 from three, 5 of 9 from the field with 14 points. Had a really weak technical foul called for something he does after every time he makes a three, but for whatever reason, this time they thought it was worth a tech.
Not to Jeff
But
Anderson.
outside of, there's you could you can go through like a laundry list of all the guys who played well, but that was one that really jumped out as one that you're really excited to see if Miles can keep this up moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, even someone else who stuck out for me was Jakari. I think he just his energy. I mean, I think he had a few good just defensive possessions, just causing turnovers. He was just yeah, he was he played well. And like you said, Miles, it was just nice to see him really have a game. Like you said, just law of averages, man. He was due to have kind of a breakout game. And now again, we have the same question, with Cam and Miles after they have a good game, which is like, can we stack these together now? Again, just like with CJ. We need if we can get this kind of consistency, this yeah, just it bodes well for us going forward. And yeah, so for Miles to kind of have that breakthrough, I mean, yeah, he had the 4 of 8 from three. His fifth field goal wasn't half bad either. Catching that reverse loop in transition. But yeah, just really good to see him have a good game, man. Really good.
Yeah, and then kind of speaking of Mr. Consistency, he's been probably Purdue's most consistent player the entire year, and that's Trey Kaufman-Wrenn. And just another just efficient game. When you look at the stat line, 7 of 9 from the field, made his only free throws, 6 rebounds, 7 assists, no turnovers, and we talked about it, some you and I during the game, but it really feels like him and Brayden have unlocked something offensively with the pick and roll and Trey getting the ball at the elbow and that floater of his. I mean, you are like shocked when it doesn't go in. That's how good he has been with that. And then he's making the right reads off that too. Braden, is making right reads off that as well. It's just a really hard play to stop, and Purdue has really ran it well here the past few games.
Yeah, it's running that pick and roll is running extremely smooth, and I watched a video where Trey was talking about how he liked facing the basket. Like you said, I mean that the way that he's been able to read the defense and making those proper reads, and quick shout out to Caleb because Caleb's learning how to play off of that as well. And I think he's also an option in terms of that pick and roll. But with Trey and Braden, what they've been able to kind of unlock with that, and how I think it has made our offense a bit, it's kind of opened up the offense as a whole in terms of the way that a defense has to react to it, how it can get other guys open. I didn't even realize like Trey had 7 assists. I think in the group chat, someone texted me and was like, "Yeah, Trey's got 7 assists," and I was like, "Huh? Like he does?" But like you said, I mean, just. I knew because I knew he'd made a few good he'd made a few passes, but it just like didn't feel like he'd done it to that clip. But yeah, I mean, 15, 7, 6, like you said, on 7 of 9 shooting, just wildly efficient. Free throw he took was good as well. Like the whole form, the whole operation was good, which because I always feel like it's weird how his free throw percentage is so as poor as it is, because it doesn't look like it's not a terrible, movement. But yeah, man, that was good. That was just good fucking stuff, man. And then that's nice that they've been able to figure that out, man, because it kind of simplifies the game to an extent too, I think, for at least for our guys.
Yeah, and it's just, I mean, we talked about this right before we went on air, but it's just wild. I don't think either you or me would have ever thought that in a game where Purdue scores 104 points and Braden Smith scores 8 points.
I would assume
Like
we got blown out. I would have assumed it would have been like Penn State or Auburn all over again.
that is just insane from an offensive standpoint, from a depth standpoint. And, this was against a top 15 team defensively, a team that was 12-3 coming into this game. So it's not like it was against, like a directional school, or something like that. This was a quality Big Ten opponent. And Purdue just blew the doors off them, man. Like it was a really fun game to watch. It was one of those games where you just gotta sit back and enjoy it, those stress-free games. Not like worry about what this means or not worry about what's gonna happen in March. Just kind of take some time and be like, man, Purdue beat Nebraska's ass. And that was really fun to watch.
Man. Like as everyone was splashing, just continue to splash shots, bro. I was just sitting there like, yeah, man, just enjoy this one, man. Just enjoy this for what it is, for sure.
And it was like you could see the guys were having fun out there too. I mean, they had two reverse alley-oops. Like they kind of knew it was one of those games. And it was neat to see them enjoy it as well because, the end of December specifically was pretty rough. And they've really turned a corner since that Auburn game. And just to see kind of that hard work pay off how it has, you could just see kind of the enjoyment there, which was really neat to see too.
Yeah, man. It was just, yeah, it was a lot of fun, man. It's not many games like that, man. Not many games. I mean, like,
So
I just can't get over the fact that, like, Nebraska scored 40 in the second half and it still lost the half by 19 points, man. Like, what the
yeah,
fuck?
I had to all honestly, when you sent that text, I had to go back and look at that because I was like, there's no way.
Dude,
And
I looked at it for a second before I sent it because I was like, that can't be right. Like maybe the ESPN app is on some bullshit. And then I closed out, I opened it back up and I was like, no, it really was that way. Oh shit. Just
just a really fun game. And just kind of to talk about how I'm just going to read some stats kind of how insanely awesome not only this game was, but just kind of that the run that Purdue has been on. So they now have won four straight Big Ten games by at least 18 points, which is the first time in school history. They're 5-1 in Big Ten play for the fifth time under Matt Painter. Their 26th straight win in Mackey Arena, which is tied for the second longest home winning streak in school history. 20-2 in the month of January since the start of 22-23, having won 10 straight games. In this game specifically, they had 32 assists, which was the fifth most in school history. 19 three-pointers made, which was the second most. They made 20 against Iowa in 2018. They shot 63% from the field, which was the second highest mark in the Matt Painter era. The 104 points were the most in a regulation game since scoring 104 against Iowa in 2020. And then this one is pretty wild too. They scored 1.53 points per possession against Nebraska, the third highest total in school history. So just, I mean, you could just read all of those, and it's just kind of mind boggling how good of an offense performance it was. Like, literally, Nebraska could do nothing to stop anybody.
Right.
Like, everybody was going well. And now, after this game, Purdue is 10-0 against Nebraska in Mackey Arena, including 9-0 under Matt Painter. And just one of those games has been decided by single digits. So just pure domination. Like we said, just a really fun game. I mean, one guy we haven't even really talked about was Fletcher Loyer, who scored 19 points on 5 of 6 from three. Like, dude, that's an insane game. And he's what, like the fourth or fifth guy we've talked about?
Right,
Like,
right.
just an overall awesome performance. And moving forward now, so 5-1 in the Big Ten. And I think after these 2 weeks, like, obviously, I don't think you or I ever thought Purdue wasn't going to be like the top portion of the Big Ten. But now, you're realistically looking at another Big Ten title. They're a game out right now. So I don't think, it's like crazy to talk about. But, just the way that they've stacked up these wins and how they've done it, man, like, you're starting to get really greedy watching this team play.
That's the thing, man. The way that they've won these last four, it definitely it's starting to make you start having some more long-term outlook changes and what this team can become, man. I think too, you've seen them win different ways to a certain extent and still be able to be pretty dominant, and it's just kind of like, all right, like, if we can keep this going, man, like, yeah, this appears to have some real staying power in terms of what it can do for you. And yeah, I mean, yeah, like, I mean, there's still quite a bit of conference play left, so we kind of have to keep that in mind. But I mean, it's we could be sitting here in a couple of weeks, and if this trend has continued, my tone will probably be a little different. I'll just say that.
Yeah, and I think to your point, like, not only is it encouraging kind of how they've won different ways, but you can also point directly to something that's changed, and that's, the insertion of CJ and Caleb into the starting lineup. And so, there's like something you can, it's not like, oh, Purdue just got on a heater. Like, is something specific you can point to and look at that has drastically kind of changed how this team has played? I think TKR is a lot more comfortable playing the four spot. And, like you said, he likes to face up guys more. It's a lot easier to do that at the four than at the five. And Caleb has really, taken his opportunity and ran with it, and, for lack of a better term, understood his assignment and kind of what Purdue needs him to do. And, one thing that was interesting, and I'm gonna be curious to see how often they run it moving forward, but there was a play in the first half, and I think Bardo called it out, but CJ brought the ball up. They ran Braden off the ball on a screen, and he caught it at the elbow and then got it right back to CJ. I can't remember if it was for a two or a three, but it was for a wide open jumper that CJ knocked down. And I'd be really curious to see kind of moving forward if you see kind of the offense run through CJ a little more and you get Braden more action off the ball. And like the opportunities that can arise from that too, is really something to be excited about for this team on the offensive end.
No, that I think that was I remember when we were talking about right before the lineup change happened, and we were talking about giving Caleb a shot, giving CJ a shot, giving him more playing time, and for me that was exact this is exactly why. It's because you needed to have a I think you needed to have a second ball handler out there on the floor with Braden. But I thought that through having them out on the court together, eventually you would get to the point where you could have CJ, who's the one who brings it up and gets us into the offense. So that way, if teams try to take away Braden from that regard, one, you're allowing Braden to learn how to play off the ball. But if a team is trying to take away Braden, thinking that he is to an extent, he's the head of the snake. Well, now you can just be like, okay, well, we have CJ, so we're just gonna have CJ. And CJ is a very good ball handler himself. So, I have that confidence in him, especially as he's getting more and more run, of the fact that he would be able to bring it up and get us into the offense and still have it running rather proficiently. Because I think he poses just enough scoring threats himself as a ball handler where if he's going into pick and roll action, you absolutely have to pay attention to him as well. So yeah, and then just to go back, you mentioned that the lineup change is something you can directly point to in terms of what has been the shift for Purdue. I also think that the actual Auburn game was a real reflection point for the entire team, because they got run out the gym. And I feel like when you're in a game like that where it's just like a complete buzzsaw, and I think they had a week off before they played again. They had to sit with that, and it was really, really bad. And I think they knew at that game, look, we're not as bad as we played this game, but clearly we need to be locked in at a level we're not right now. And I think since that game, you have seen that. I think, like you said, the lineup changed, but I also think that Auburn game is proving to be a real, real reflect. I think they said inflection point for the guys.
Yeah, and I mean, hey, your point, Matt, said that specifically in his post game comments about how that game really humbled them, and how they realized, they got ran out the gym by the best team in the country, which is a pretty good measuring stick, and it can be really good or bad, and for Purdue's case there, it was bad at the time because it showed, that they weren't ready to play at that type of level. But then, to all of the staff, to all the players' credit, you can either take that and handle it one of two ways. And they chose to kind of take it as a humbling and to get better.
Yeah, I'll say,
And
lock this thing to turn this thing around.
one other thing to kind of go with that, and we had talked about it, early on in the year that this was going to take a little bit of time, for the team to get comfortable, for the team to kind of learn. It's not like a new style, it's not like a new offense that they're running, but it's a different style almost because you're not running everything through the two-time national player of the year. You gotta you got what
It's the return
they
of the
hire.
motion. I feel like it's just a return of the motion offense type stuff, where you're gonna hear Painter say, "Move, move, move, move." That's, like you said, the offense has shifted from really being post-centric to where it is more perimeter, but you also do have that pick and roll threat. So you do have that paint play as well. But yeah, man, it just feels like they like guys are like it's it the lights are all kind of clicking on for people at the same time.
Yeah, and I think like to kind of go with that as well, and like not to kind of beat a dead horse, because I think we talk about it almost every time, but the way that he plays, you have to mention every time, but it's been a different Braden Smith the past couple of weeks. And he's really kind of answered the call. I wouldn't say he was like struggling. But when you come in as the preseason player of the year, your expectations are raised higher. And I would think he would be the first to tell you that kind of in the non-con, he wasn't playing his best basketball. And man, has he turned it up to a whole nother level here. And no kind of surprise that Purdue has had the type of the success that they've had the past few weeks, given how well Brain has played.
Right, your best player elevates his game, elevates those around him, and then you start to see positive results. So, yeah, man, it's been quite the shift from what it was probably what, like 30 days ago. So.
Yeah, so let's kind of look ahead a little bit, but before we look ahead to this West Coast trip, I did just kind of want to touch on like the Big Ten standings as a whole, and kind of where the Boilermakers are at right now in the middle of January. Everybody's played about five or six games. Michigan and Michigan State are 5-0 at the top. Both look to like be playing just insane basketball right now. Michigan State kind of has really had. And it's kind of two different type of styles of play, because Michigan State seems to be more of guard oriented, really kind of like a run and gun, and Michigan like just has these bigs that are just uber talented, and just run a really nice offense. So two kind of different styles of play, but two obviously very successful styles right now. So they are both 5-0. Purdue is alone in second place at 5-1. And then there's a group of teams with two losses, including Oregon, Indiana, Illinois, all at 4-2, and Wisconsin, Iowa at 3-2. So that's kind of the top half. Obviously, there's a whole lot of basketball to be played, but kind of initial reaction sim to me is kind of, I don't think anybody really thought how or knew how good Michigan State and Michigan were going to be.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think anyone saw those two coming out as strong as they have. Michigan State, I mean, I think they only ended up winning by 10, but they pretty thoroughly controlled Northwestern yesterday. It was at Northwestern too, and then Michigan just plays this brand of basketball, especially having 2 7-footers. I think it's I think one's last. I think it's what Golden and then Wolf. Who just both like it's crazy. They have 2 7-footers and they impact the game kind of differently, but there's like a little bit of crossover because Golden's more of like a post threat, but like and Wolf can obviously step outside and shoot it, but they can both kind of kill you in that mid-range area. And they've got some strong guard play. I mean, obviously both teams do. It's just there's definitely interesting to see them at the top. But I don't and so you know what? Let them have all the attention. I don't mind it if Purdue wants to if he wants to lay in the weeds and just, as long as we're kind of focusing on our stuff and we're racking up the wins, like, hey, then come late February, everyone's gonna be like, wait, well, there's Purdue again. So, it's been a nice start. It's been a nice start for us this conference season. Obviously, yeah, there's a lot of good. I think there's a lot of good teams. I think there's a lot of teams in the Big Ten who can just catch you, who can get hot. Like if you come in and you like you're kind of asleep, like you can find yourself catching a big L at like, Northwestern or Rutgers or like a Penn State. So
Even Wisconsin is a totally different Wisconsin team. They are scoring in ways that I'm not sure we've ever seen a Wisconsin team score. They can fill it up. But yeah, to your point, just kind of very interesting, kind of how deep it is, and how good some of these teams are, and like how you just got to bring it every time out. Otherwise, you're going to be in for a rude awakening. I will say, kind of probably the team outside of Purdue that I'll be most interested to watch this week is going to be the Illinois team. They got a couple of big, big games. Tomorrow night, Tuesday, they travel to Bloomington to take on IU. And then this weekend, they take on Michigan State. So a big chance for Illinois there. And we'll kind of learn a lot more about them. We'll learn a little bit about IU too, and kind of how do they look after they had a disappointing loss again. They got run out the gym at Iowa. So both those teams could use a win. So that'll be a really exciting game tomorrow. I think it's on Peacock. But for the Boilermakers, let's kind of switch gears. They will take their West Coast trip. I believe on the broadcast, they said that Purdue was going to fly out tomorrow, Tuesday morning, to kind of get acclimated out on the West Coast. And then they will play Washington in Seattle on Wednesday. That is a 9:30 Eastern tip on Big Ten Network. And then a monster game on Saturday, going up against Oregon in Eugene, a 3 o'clock Eastern tip on NBC. Sim, we kind of talked a little bit about it last week about how kind of with these trips, like I think realistically, if you can split it, you're like, okay, like it is what it is. After this past week, has that changed your outlook at all?
Slightly, but I've been trying to make sure I'm trying to be better about managing my expectations.
That was a long pause, so.
I mean, I want to say no. I mean, to me, it's kind of like, yeah, if you win both, yeah, this gets really, obviously, like, yeah, I feel like this team is capable of winning both. I should say that. I think they're capable of winning both, but I'm not going to be like the world's ending for sure if they go 1-1. I personally feel like the one that you have to win, if you're going to split them, the one that you have to win is Washington. That's the one that you have to win, Washington. They've had a very tough start to their season. And I think they're kind of like starting to figure some stuff out, but just in terms of where they are in like again, like I think we said this maybe not, if not the last episode, but maybe before that. But it was like, if you believe Purdue, if you believe you're the team who you are, that Washington one has to be the one. Like you have to get that one. Like you said, that Oregon game, that's a you know that's a stronger opponent, and I'm sure that that'll be a raucous environment in itself. So obviously that ask is going to be slightly bigger. But I think if you told me which one would which loss would. Which like which loss would sit better with me? It's probably Oregon, Washington. I'd probably be rather annoyed about kind of along the lines like Penn State, but yeah, it hasn't changed. But obviously, based on the way you see, I'm rambling. I'm not nearly as convinced as I was last week.
Yeah, I think this Washington game is big because it kind of feels like if you can get past Washington, then you're almost playing with house money against Oregon. Whereas a loss against Washington, I wouldn't say like you're hitting the panic button, but it just makes that game just so much more important. As far as like a standings and everything like that, because Purdue then and Oregon will both have two losses, so that turns into like a monster game as far as standings go. The one thing I would be hesitant, and you touched on it a little bit, but I did just want to highlight Washington. If you're just looking at Washington's record and you see they're 10-7 overall, 1-5 in the Big Ten, and you think, oh well, they stink. Like that record's not very good. They have had just an insane start of the year. So they started off, they played UCLA and USC were their first two games in early December in the Big Ten. They lost both of those, but then in January they had Maryland at home. They had Illinois at home, who they almost beat. They only lost by four. Then this past week they had to go to East Lansing and to Ann Arbor. So, they're coming off of three losses, but arguably against three of the top probably five teams in the Big Ten, with two of those being on the road. And we all know, that East Lansing and Ann Arbor are two very tough places to go play. So, just kind of wanted to highlight that if you look at their schedule alone, or if you look at their record alone and see that they're 1-5, you may think, oh, this is going to be,
To be a
a
cakewalk.
cakewalk. And that's not the case. This is a good team. It's a really interesting environment in Alaska Airlines Arena. Obviously, kind of with this being the first time that they've played in conference, I haven't really had a lot of chances to see them. I watched a little bit of that Illinois game, and it's a very kind of small arena. They're almost right on top of you. You got to think it's going to be a raucous environment. Kind of one that Purdue is used to being kind of the top dog the past few years, but it doesn't make it any easier. And one where they're really going to have to bring their A game, for lack of a better term. And I feel like we kind of talk about it every time where we talk about the turnovers, the turnovers, the turnovers. But that's really been a difference maker as well, kind of these past 2 weeks. Is Purdue has kind of flipped a switch as far as taking care of the basketball. And they're going to need, obviously, to do that. But then also kind of curious to see, like, what happens, as far how do they respond after this game where they shot lights out? Like, law of numbers thinks, would say they're going to kind of come back to normal a little bit. Is that like normal to where, they're still knocking down some shots, or are they going to be broke like how they were at Rutgers? So that's kind of going to be, I would say, the two things to kind of watch, at least for me there.
Yeah, no, I agree. Rebounding, of course, ball security, those are going to be the two things I think that are paramount. But like you said, we know now that this team is capable, even on the road, if you don't shoot, if they don't shoot well, that they're still able, they can still win a game. So I'm curious to see if they can, if that is the case. And like you said, after such a blazing performance, the Purdue pessimist in me just kind of feels the, I can smell the 3 of 19 from three coming. It's like, well, if that's what actually happens, like, how do we respond to that? I feel like, especially for the young guys too, it's just, it's always a test when you go on the road for a new environment, like you said. And yeah, I just feel like this is the one, like the Washington one, you have to get. You have to find a way to get it. You have to.
Yeah, I would agree. And then, we haven't really talked about it a lot, but that game this weekend in Eugene just turned into a monster game as well. Be essentially probably at the time will be a battle for second place in the Big Ten. And again, a new environment, a tough environment. You gotta figure another kind of raucous environment. It is kind of a mid-afternoon tip. It is the second game of the West Coast trip, so they should be more acclimated kind of to the time zone and everything like that. So they have that going kind of in their favor. But another just monster matchup, probably the biggest Big Ten matchup to date for Purdue this weekend.
Yeah, no, I just like you said earlier, man. I kind of reiterate those sentiments about how it's why the Washington game to me is so important, because if you lose the Washington game, then you roll into that Oregon game, and you're just more so dreading. Obviously, I don't know, from a Purdue standpoint, you're like, man, you don't want this to be the start of a slide, because after this week, it's not like it gets any easier. So yeah, you don't want to. You just want to try to make sure you're banking these before you really get to like, the meat of the schedule. So curious to see, yeah, because like they have, at least by our standards, it's a 9:30, it's a later game on Wednesday and then an earlier game on Saturday. So hopefully they, because they have what, like 3 days in between, they're young enough, they should be able to they should be able to recover well enough. But yeah, man, that Oregon game will be a trying one as well. I think they got a good big. Like I think it's they have a stretch five, and he's score all over you on the court, inside, outside. So they will present those some challenges of themselves. So yeah, just have your bottles of alcohol by your sides, folks.
Yeah, I think it just always worries you having to go out west, especially, obviously this is the first time that Purdue has had to do that. So there's kind of like that unknown, like you really don't have anything to go off of kind of how they'll respond out there. This is the first time they've gone out west since I think the Phil Knight Classic. So, they don't have a lot of experience playing out west. And so, for me, that's kind of the most worrisome thing is you just really don't have any information to know kind of or to kind of what to expect.
Yeah, because I was like, not even a lot of guys from that PK Classic. I don't think there's not a whole lot of guys who are left from that team, right? I mean, like Caleb's still there, obviously. Caleb,
Obviously,
Braden,
Brandon
Fletch.
Fletch.
Maybe
Trey, and that's
Kyle,
probably it.
I'd say probably Trey. Yeah. So for everyone else, I think for, well, maybe Cam, but I don't can't play that year.
Yeah, I think that was the redshirt year for Cam.
Ooh, yeah, fun times ahead, man. But I mean, it's just, and to an extent, as much as you're pointing that out, like I think someone was saying, like I think actually Painter said, he said like before the Nebraska game, he said, man, like he said everyone is gonna has to deal with this. Like everyone has to figure this out. Like when you make the West Coast trip. And he was actually saying that for the West Coast schools, like Oregon, Washington, USC and UCLA, he's like, it's harder for them because they're gonna have to do it more often. But nonetheless, he's like, even for those of like the schools that were in the quote unquote, traditional Big Ten, here in the Midwest, every school is going to have to figure it out when they take that trip out west about how they kind of schedule things and how they kind of like schedule things getting out there, and then even when they're there, to make sure that they're kind of having some sort of routine that's good for the players and everyone else.
Yeah, and then to kind of just put like a bow on all this, but I didn't really think about it until they talked about it on the broadcast this weekend. But the Big Ten schedulers really did not do pretty much of a favor where they had to go fly out to Jersey and then fly back home to West Lafayette and then fly out to Washington all within a week's time. That is a lot of travel coast to coast. But like you said, everybody's got to deal with it. I can't imagine kind of what the West Coast teams, the amount of miles that they have, for their road trips. Probably can't complain too much, but did just kind of think that was interesting too. Like in a week's time, you go from Jersey to West Lafayette and then out west. Like, hey,
It's hard to get those sky miles now, man. You know what I'm saying? The schedule
that.
gotta adjust. So I get it.
No, but
Diamond
it'll
in the
be
past.
interesting to see. Like we said, there's a lot of good vibes going on right now, and I don't, I think with a 1-1 road trip, I think the good vibes are still going strong. I think with a 2-0 road trip, you're gonna have to talk me out of Purdue going to the Final Four. And with an 0-2 road trip, you're probably gonna have to talk me off the ledge. So, what's gonna happen? I don't know, but it'll be exciting nonetheless there.
Yeah, for sure, man. It's just, yeah. We'll be back after the fact, and hopefully, we're not having to talk ourselves off the ledge.
But just to kind of highlight again, just to kind of go over the times real quickly. So Wednesday night, it's a 9:30 Eastern tip off. So make sure to have your coffee ready for the late night tip. If you want to put a little Bailey's in your coffee, highly recommend it. But that'll be on Big Ten Network. And then Saturday the 18th, they'll be in Eugene to take on Oregon, 3 o'clock Eastern tip on NBC. We will see. Will the good vibes continue? Will the hot streak for the Boilers keep going? Lots of kind of things to see what'll happen. But whatever happens, Sim and I will be here to break it all down and discuss. So thank you everybody for listening. Thank you for all the love on Twitter. Thank you for the 5-star reviews. Please keep all that up. Please continue to interact with us on Twitter. I really enjoy that as well. But most important, everybody, boiler up.
Yes, sir.